CJ, Stewie, and Justin have spoken their thoughts on what happened, how the wheels came off the wagon year. You know, I look at this outside of the entire season, and we can do that autopsy in a sec, but just in the series itself, I look at it and I say the Leafs did everything that they wanted to do. Like, all the underlings look great. Were there a couple of goals that Anderson wanted back? Sure, but they're not all going to be classics. I look at the team and I say they did everything well except that pesky part about taking the little black round thing and putting it over the red line. That was it. Outside of that, I saw a team that dominated. How did you see it?
Well, I saw a Columbus team that did exactly what it wanted to do as well. And, you know, Columbus feels it probably could have won 4 of the 5 games in the series playing that way. I mean, they went into this matchup and, you know, much like Tampa last year, I think gave them a blueprint, but they, you know, tried to build a game plan to give up as few rush chances as possible and as few quality looks as possible. And, you know, I'm sympathetic to, you know, what Sheldon Keefe said last night about, you know, the shooting percentage being at a level, obviously that probably wouldn't stay that way if the Leafs could play 70 more games against the Blue Jackets. But I also think that there's a reason that shooting percentage was low, and a lot of it is to do with how Columbus defended and how they were able to match up in the series. And so, you know, I think that this is a real, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but I think that the Leafs are at a real crossroads. I really don't know how you can watch that series, and I know it's only 5 games, and I know we've just had a pandemic, but especially watch that season and come back with the same plan. I mean, when it really mattered, the Leafs' offensive depth didn't make a difference against the team that they had a lot more talent than. And I just don't see how that changes in future years unless they change the way they're built.
You know, it's really unwise for GMs to make moves until the cement has hardened on the issues, until you really know. If you're Kyle Dubas, do you know what your problems are at this point?
Well, I'm sure he does, you know, and I think he would probably still view this differently than us. You know, I'm not convinced that they're going to do, you know, the things that a lot of us think that probably should happen. I mean, they weren't helped here by the fact that in addition to the COVID-19 pause, it's changed what's going to happen to the NHL salary cap now for the next 4 to 5 years. And it's not going to go in a way the Leafs needed to go. It's not going to go in a way they would have bet it was going when they gave out the contracts they did. You know, I understand you got to pay your star players. If you have talented guys that have great offensive numbers, they're going to get their money. But, you know, I just don't see how having half the salary cap invested in 4 forwards, as good as those guys are, you know, it's not, I'm not even ragging on those players, even for their performance in the series. It's just more, I think, sort of fundamentally, the Leafs are going to come up against a big issue here. And you know, the minute they signed Tavares, essentially they were signaling that their window is now. And so I do think that you can't really afford to just try it again and hope it works. I think that you have to take what you've seen the last 2 years in particular, you know, look at the positives and the negatives. And to me, it points to, with not much salary cap room growth, a redistribution of how they spend their money. And that's going to mean trading one of the big players and spending that money somewhere else.
Stewie?
So, Chris, if you're Kyle Dubas and you win the draft lottery tonight, do you look
at... Well, it gets easier then.
Do you look at moving that pick?
Yep.
I wouldn't move the pick. You know, I think... Because what's valuable about the draft lottery, I mean, obviously, future talent is can be a dangerous thing. I mean, at some point, you need to win today, and so you have to forecast when that player, you know, presumably Alexis Lafreniere, is going to be ready to help you. But what you get with him is 3 years where his entry-level contract, even if he hits all the bonuses, can exceed $3 million. And that has huge value, especially for a team like the Leafs that you know, are going to have cap problems as long as they have this, you know, some version of this core intact. I mean, the cap is going to be a constant conversation here, and it's going to be an impediment to them doing what they want. And so I think if you got the number one overall pick and you're in their front office, I mean, for that reason alone, you'd have to keep it. And I'm certainly not a draft expert, but, you know, the people that know more about this, like Merrick, seem to believe that player in particular is worth it in addition to that. But I also think, just from a 10,000 feet standpoint, that it's way more valuable to draft a future star and get 3 years of him where he's massively outperforming that contract.
And further to that point, even if you did want to move that pick in order to bring in some immediate help, you don't have the cap space to do it.
package, super package.
now we're making video game trades right now, aren't we?
Yeah.
This is David Poyle dealing with Jim Rutherford. Sorry, Justin, go ahead.
So they're looking to save money at the fringes, and obviously there are a few guys who can help them do that, and they're on the way, right? It's Rasmus Sandin, it's Timothy Liljegren, it's Nick Robertson. They have young guys, and oh, I can't help but notice those are all small and skilled players. If you're Kyle Dubas and you have a philosophy about building a hockey team, it takes years to sort of purge what was before, get it shaped how you like. This is kind of what his vision is going to be. Do you deviate now from the plan, getting frustrated that, okay, we haven't been able to get past bigger physical defensive teams? Or is this a situation where Dubas is going to or should lean into it further and just see if his vision holds water?
Well, he strikes me as a guy that's going to lean into it. You know, I can't tell you definitively what he's going to do at this point, and I'm very interested to hear how, you know, both Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan discuss this season when they speak on Wednesday to reporters here, because I think it will be pretty telling. I mean, I wonder about that LA trade they made, and if, you know, trying to get Kyle Clifford was at least a step in that direction, or an acknowledgement that, you know, that they might need to build the team a little bit differently than the way they've been trending. Not to put it on one player, but just you know, maybe putting some value in someone who's going to, you know, finish ahead and be a little tougher to play against, and then more in the mold of what Stewie's looking for from his cup champions. You know, but it'll be interesting because obviously, you know, I remember the day after Mike Babcock was fired and, you know, Kyle spoke then and he basically said that he's willing to go down with the ship, essentially, that he believes fundamentally in what he's doing, that he understands the criticism, he's heard it, but he's not going to change, that, you know, his vision isn't wavering, even though the Leafs didn't have a great start to the year, even though, you know, they got to the point where they fired the you know, one of the premier coaches in the NHL, and that was a move, again, to be more in the line of what, you know, Kyle envisions for his team. And so I would expect that would be unchanged, but I can't say that for sure. And certainly this is just such a critical juncture with where the Leafs are. I mean, really they have next year where the cap isn't an issue, but, you know, the year after that, they've got Riley and Anderson, and, you know, what comes with that is a series of difficult decisions, and so I can't wait to see what's next. I mean, there's nothing easy about this. There's not an obvious path, I guess, is the answer I'm getting to here. And you know, I'm not sure how they're going to handle this particular setback because of the unusual nature of everything that happened this season.
You know, there'll be, I'm with Chris Johnston here from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. There'll be decisions made at every single level of this team. And as it relates to the Maple Leafs on the ice, I would imagine one of the decisions would have to be, what do you do with the goaltender? Frederik Andersen has one more year left on term. And to be honest with you, CJ, I'm not sold that they're sold on Frederik Andersen. Agree or disagree?
Well, what could you be sold on after this year? I mean, you know, certainly he's been a good goaltender for them for four seasons. You know, he's been about what they probably expected when they traded for him and you know, gave him a five-year, $5 million contract. You know, but this season was statistically his worst as an NHL player. Obviously, he's a product of what happens in front of him, and the Leafs, by a lot of metrics, weren't a very good defensive team. So, you know, he's put in a tougher spot than, you know, a lot of his peers are, just by the way his team plays. But, you know, I don't fault him for this series. You know, I haven't paid too much attention to the other coverage today. I don't know what the people are talking like that. But, you know, I don't think he was the reason they lost. I mean, it's like a save on the Liam Foodie shot last night. You know, I think he got a bad break on the first one that got by him. But in general, I think he was good enough. But where you go from here is going to be interesting. I mean, they have Campbell for a couple seasons, still signed to be a backup or more of a platoon type of guy. And I do think that there's room to look around for other options, but there's not a lot of obviously better players that are going to be able to come in at that kind of money. And you know, so if you're not reimagining the salary cap picture, I don't see how you're going to, say, try and get a Robin Leonard, who's a free agent this summer, or someone of that nature. So, you know, they might just, by the circumstances here, almost be forced to just you know, run with another year of Freddie, and then, you know, make the transition after that. But You know, he hasn't been the best goalie in a playoff series yet. I think that's the thing people are holding against him. But, you know, I don't put this one on him, to be honest.
Stewie?
Well, I think they need a number 1A defenseman, cough, cough, wink, wink, Alex Pietrangelo. But I'll continue here. So you mentioned that this roster is going to look a little bit different next year, and you know you see them not being able to make those moves, you know, with the current big four making what they're making. So who do you see being the odd man out, and what type of defenseman could they possibly get on the market with their cap problems?
Well, I think this is the crux of the matter. If there's a way that they bring back largely this team intact, where they say have to trade a middle six forward to make everything work, you know, someone like Andreas Johnsson or you know, Kapanen or Kerfoot, you know, someone in that price range, if you move that player out, I think that there's a way to build this team where you've re-signed Dermott and you've re-signed Ilya Mikheyev to a one-year deal at, you know, pretty low money, and you basically run this thing back, and you do it, obviously, without Tyson Barrie and Cody Ceci, you know, who we expect to be departing UFAs. But you haven't changed fundamentally your defensive core, if that's the case. And I think so, if they want to do that, that's where you get into having to likely trade someone who's soaking up more cap room. Maybe you use that player as, you know, as the enticement to get an elite defenseman. But, you know, knowing how they are, I mean, maybe they won't do any of that. Maybe we're seeing basically next year's Leafs be the defense you saw in the series, with Sandin playing and maybe Mikko Lehtinen, who they signed out of Finland, and that's it. Maybe there's not a big sweeping change. I just think that would be a very risky decision, and it could be one that, you know, I think that's the decision they have to make. You know, if we have to improve the defense, if the answer is yes, how do we do that? And I think, you know, that's where there's not an obvious path, and it's going to involve trading a player you like to make the money all work.
Yeah, hang on. So I can interject. I'm with you on that one, CJ. I think that this is going to be a listen. There's nothing. The team. It's not just the Maple Leafs that are up against the cap, but other teams making moves is going to be so difficult right now. I don't think it would surprise anybody. Wouldn't surprise me if it's just we're moving some players out on expiring contracts. Rasmus Sandin is in. Mikko Lehtinen is in. Alex Barabanov is in, and that's the team. Let's go.
Right. And you know, the day after a loss, I'm sure fans don't want to hear that, right? I mean, the tenor in the city is boiling right now. And you know, everyone, including in the column I filed after last night's game, is saying I think that they need to go deeper than that. They might not be able to get it done this offseason, though, even if they want to. I mean, there might not be a return for trading one of your marquee players that makes that decision make sense. Because you're right, this is a conversation happening in 10 other cities. When their teams get beat out or have been beat out already, because there's a lot of teams with serious cap issues, including some in the division like Tampa, that are actually in a much worse spot entering this offseason vis-a-vis their cap. I mean, the good news for the Lightning is they still got a chance to win a Stanley Cup, and if they do that, I think any changes that will come will have been worth it because of you know, ultimately getting across the finish line. But you know, this is not a Leafs specific problem. I just think that they have sort of an interesting problem because their window is kind of passing them by, some for reasons of the decisions they've made and the contracts they've given out, but some just by what's happened and the fact that the salary cap is literally not going to go up, you know, potentially right through the core of these guys' career, and they're all signed at pretty big tickets. You know, and so I think that presents an interesting team-building problem or roster construction problem, and, you know, it's going to really test, I think, the loyalty and the patience of the people in the front office.
Sorry, Justin, go ahead.
CJ, there's a legitimate chance here you just go, I don't know, to this question, but I'll fire it out there anyway. Is there, you know, there's only so many changes you can make with a hockey team, and one of them is a coaching change. That's not happening in Toronto. They've just brought in a new coach, but Paul McFarland, the Leafs assistant coach, is on their way out. He was running their power play, as we understand it, their power play at times, I thought, looked disjointed, maybe underutilized some of their offensive skill set. Do you have any idea what's going to happen with the Leafs assistant coaching position? I know that there is a big opportunity there for someone to come in and use the tools that they have on the offensive side of the rink.
That's for sure. And I don't know who they're going to hire. You know, I do know they spoke with Rocky Thompson about that position, and he ultimately is chosen to go to San Jose to work there as an assistant coach. But you're right. And I don't know even know if Dave Haxtell is back, you know. And I don't say that based on specific knowledge. It's just, you know, he was a veteran, a more veteran guy who, you know, has been an NHL head coach in the past. I think a huge driving factor behind his decision to come to Toronto last summer was the chance to work for with Mike Babcock and to steal what he could and to, you know, see what the Leafs are all about. But, you know, I'm not certain that he envisions himself as a long-term assistant coach. And obviously, you know, Sheldon Keefe didn't bring in any of his own people with an in-season change. And so I think that there's definitely going to be turnover there. And I would expect that Sheldon will get some input into who he wants to hire. And, you know, I don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to become an even more, it's going to become a staff that's even more in the vision of obviously the general manager and the head coach. And that's really the way it should be. But you're right in that the Leafs had a good power play for about half the season. And then it became less effective. You know, I don't know that it cost them this series in particular. You know, the specialty teams actually went in Toronto's favor. I mean, Columbus won the series with being minus one on its power play. They gave up a shorthanded goal and they didn't score on any of their power plays. You know, if you had told me that going in, I wouldn't have said that would work. I wouldn't have believed the Leafs would only have 3 5-on-5 goals either. So it's funny how we can break these things down every which way, and then, you know, it usually plays out a little bit different than what you're anticipating.
The answer for me to this question is the Pittsburgh Penguins, but I'll ask it to you nonetheless. Of the teams that we were surprised to see exit in the qualifying round, and we'll focus on, you know, for purposes of this conversation, the big three, although you could probably throw Nashville in there considering, and Winnipeg, considering Nashville was just in the Stanley Cup final about 5 minutes ago. Toronto, Edmonton, and Pittsburgh. Where should the general manager make big decisions?
It's Pittsburgh. You know, I think that they're having a very real conversation there about if this kind of run is over, if they can reboot it again, which they've already done one and then once and added two cups to the first one that Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and company won. You know, it was such a weird year there. The health of the team was a factor in their performance. You know, they just were without too many guys for too long, including Sidney Crosby. Jake Gensel wouldn't have played again probably unless, you know, we had this COVID-19 pause. You know, I think that they're probably more at a crossroads in deciding, do we go all in on trying to win? I suppose you have to do that when you still have two of the premier centers in the game, even despite the fact that they're creeping towards the mid-30s at this point. But, you know, they would probably stand out to benefit among the good teams in the draft lottery the most. I mean, everyone's going to benefit if they win the number one pick, but, you know, getting that kind of an elite talent just through the crazy market forces of what happened this year and the return to play format and the fact they were upset by Montreal would be quite something for them. But I think change is coming everywhere. You know, Edmonton, it's only a year now into Ken Holland's time as a general manager. There was only so much he could do initially after taking over. Now he's seen the operation from the inside. And so I would think, you know, you'll see them look to build a better team around Connor McDavid as they should. And as I've said, I do think the Leafs may end up standing pat essentially. But I'm not sure that's the right way forward for them either.
Stewie?
So I had Edmonton Oilers winning the Stanley Cup, and obviously they're done. So who do you have as the Cup favorite? Is it one of these play-in teams or one of these teams that sort of had a little bit of a nonchalant break here?
Well, I picked Tampa, and I'm willing to stick with that because I think you should. But you know, seeing Victor Hedman leave the game on Saturday night and you know, just getting a sense that his injury might be quite serious, you know, changes my view of that fact, just the idea that they would – be able to get through four rounds of you know, competition without a player like that. I think it's wide open, which is, I know, punting on the question a little bit, but it will not surprise me. I mean, someone like Philadelphia, the way they played right into the pause, what we've seen in these round-robin games, I think that they're very dangerous. You know, Carolina's dangerous. Colorado might be the favorite, honestly. If Hedman's unable to return or if he's out for a significant amount of time here. You know, Colorado's probably my number one spot. But I put the Lightning down on the website, and David Amber's running a pool for those of us behind the scenes, and I picked the Lightning in that. So I got to stick true to where my money is.
Justin, CJ, last one to you.
As the Leafs pack up and exit the bubble, it occurs to me there's one thing I haven't heard anything about, and that's probably due to journalist access, but how is life inside the bubble? Are you hearing anything about our players happy? Is it a good situation? What's going on behind the scenes in the bubble? Have you heard?
I heard that everyone was exceptionally happy early on. I think that a lot of people had low expectations entering the bubble life, and they were probably exceeded. You know, I also heard here more in the last few days from a few guys who said it's getting a little bit old, which I would expect. I mean, I don't know if any of you, I don't know if you guys have ever spent multiple straight weeks in the same hotel, even if it's a really nice hotel. It just starts to feel weird. It's not your house. You've got to order every meal or eat buffet style every meal, all those things. I know the NHL has tried to go above and beyond to give them things to do with the golf simulators and all the various things. But at the end of the day, these guys don't have many freedoms in there. They can't get out too much in terms of being outside. They can't walk out of the hotel with a coffee in the morning and take a 10-minute walk anywhere. And I think that becomes quite restrictive. So, you know, I think that this is going to be a real challenge, and it's something Justin will talk about more as the playoffs go on, is just how the teams manage the kind of cabin fever that comes with this. I mean, if there's one good thing I would think being a player is that the schedule of games is aggressive. I mean, no one is getting 2 days off between series, except for, in this case, the teams that won quickly, like Carolina in the first round. And there's back-to-backs in every round right up until the cup final. So this playoffs will play out quicker than ever before. I think that there's going to be a psychological advantage for the teams that come from the Eastern Conference just because they get to switch midway through and actually go to Edmonton, you know, versus, you know, a team that might represent the West and have spent, you know, 65 nights in the JW Marriott in Edmonton by the end of this thing. You know, I do think that the idea of just moving and having new restaurants to choose from and something different is going to be a huge boost for whatever teams come out of the Eastern Conference. So I think the easy answer to that is bubble life isn't too bad, but it's
already starting. Do they get their Marriott points?
I don't think they do. I mean, you've worked for a team before. I don't think anyone does on a team. I wouldn't be doing that without my Marriott points.
For sure not.
See, Dave, before we let you go, quick thought on we're going to talk about this at the other side of the break. Quick thought on Dale Tallon out as general manager. They began their search externally. I was under the impression this would be the tap in and Eric Joyce would go in, but they're going external in the search. But the news of the day in Florida is Dale Tallon is out.
Well, I think I can understand why that happened. I mean, the pressure to win there has become quite real from ownership. They had a big summer last summer, and the gambles didn't pay off, at least not in the immediate term. And, you know, Dale's had that job twice, but over a long period of time. And, you know, the Panthers still haven't won a playoff series since, I think, 1996. So, you know, I think that my sense of what's gone on in Florida is they've seen other of the so-called warmer markets, southern markets, whether it's in Nashville or Vegas. You know, there's a number around the league that have really gotten a fan base going, that have built something that gets hockey on the up in some of those places, and you know, I think that they want to see if they'll get a similar response in South Florida if the team becomes, you know, good enough to compete for a championship, and so that didn't happen, and now they move on. I'm with you. I would have thought that Eric was getting that job, and so, you know, I'm not sure where they're going to go at this point, but you know, Dale had a long run there. And unfortunately, yeah, when you're in these jobs, if you don't win enough games, this is how it always ends.